We're going to talk about some Hollywood stuff today. It's probably not that exciting. I was trying. Got Jennifer for a second. She's a Hollywood. How about anybody watching the NBC show This Is Us? A bunch of women and JJ. You're the only guy that raised your hand. Be proud. Kurt, sorry. Kurt was down too. I watch it too. So that we can go to hang out and talk about the great show, right? Just a great show. My wife cries every week. Every single week. I don't understand you sadists that are like, let's watch the show. It's so great. Like, you're weeping. I probably wouldn't watch it by myself, I have to admit. But it is a great show, and it's kind of Mary Beth's show. But it's an interesting show. It just kind of started, and it's been really well received. A lot of awards and a lot of attention and things. As network television kind of slowly dies, its death, shows like this kind of come along. But it's an interesting show about, I don't want to give a lot away, but kind of centers on a group of triplets, two boys and a girl that were born together. And it's a kind of an innovative drama because it bounces back and forth between them as adults, and they're about my age. So it bounces back and forth from 2017 back to the late 70s and early 80s, and it does a really great job of kind of intermixing. And I think one of the reasons why it's so popular is because it's one of the few shows that I've ever watched that really wrestles with something that we all wrestle with all the time. And that is, we are victims, for better or worse, of our upbringing. And we all realize that, you know. And what's interesting, I think it was just the last episode, it even went back another generation and showed the parents as children. And the reason that's so compelling is because I know every week that Mary Beth and I are watching it, we inevitably start talking about what it was like when we were growing up and how our parents interacted with us. And I feel like we should have had this conversation before we had kids, because the way we're parenting is going to have largely dictated by the way that we were parented growing up. And so the show, it deals with all the contemporary, you know, issues of homosexuality and racism and all the stuff that's in popular in Hollywood. But the reason I think it's a little different is because it kind of tells the story from a generational perspective. And I think no matter how old you are, you can watch the show and you relate probably to one of the characters. And depending on the upbringing in your life, you relate to maybe a certain scenario or a certain storyline within the show. But the thing that's really made me think a lot about, and I've been thinking a lot about this over the last couple of weeks, and it's probably largely because of the television show, is you think a lot about those early years surrounding your birth, because they're just a mystery to you, you know? I mean, I've been thinking about it with my kids because I'm fully aware of the process of the first 10 or 11, 12 years of my kids' lives. But my first 5 or 6 years, man, I don't know anything about it, really. You know, you have these one kind of dimly lit memories from years ago, and they kind of get all mixed up, and they're probably not even right. And what's even more interesting, and those of you who watch the show know how kind of central this is to the storyline, is how did I even get here in the first place? Because when you really start to think about how we were given life, and imagine all the stories that we could tell. In the perfect scenario, I think we would say, yeah, a husband and a wife are together for several years. They're planning emotionally. They're planning spiritually, financially. They're just planning for this moment. And when the moment arrives, they have no problems with their pregnancy. And they get pregnant right when they want to. And the baby comes 9 months to the day. I mean, those are the perfect scenario, right? And we all realize that it almost never happens that way. That there are so many different scenarios that take place. And there are people in this room who were accidentally here. You don't have to raise your hand, anybody. There was a long time that I thought anybody who had 3 kids, the third one was an accident. Because everybody I talked to was like, yeah, then we had the 2 and we thought we were done. And we have 3, all planned, very perfect. I have a brother and a sister. My youngest brother was not. I read a statistic, and if you were at the funeral the other day, I used it at a funeral, which was kind of weird, but I was looking up a statistic for how many pregnancies were unplanned in our world today. And not necessarily, and I think usually that gets brought up in like the worst scenario, like a one-night stand. You know, obviously those are unplanned, but even just untimed. or what wasn't timed maybe perfectly. And I've talked to some of you in this room and know that some of your children maybe came along that way. Oh, well, a couple years early, or then our favorite, right? We thought we were done, and one comes along. Any idea what percentage of pregnancies that you would think that fall in that category? It's a lot. Thank you, Miss Negative up here. 72%. 95%. Most of them are just... But it's high. The number that I kept seeing, I don't know how you study this. We can ask for a show of hands. That might help. How many of you... I'm just kidding. About 40% is the number that I saw out there. 40%. So almost half of us were an accident. Like, just think about that for a minute. Almost half of us were just an accident. Now, it might have been a just mistimed accident, but then some of us were born, and I have someone in my family who, my dad, was born completely as an accident. Some people are born of an affair. Imagine that. Born of affair. Some people were born of rape. Some people were born of, a really short-term relationship, maybe a high school fling. I mean, all of the different ways that your existence can be here. And I did this at the Willowbrook this week. I was talking about this. I use this material all week, man. This was great. Funerals and Bible studies. It's all tempered out now. So but it was funny. I was talking at Willowbrook. So everybody's like over 90, and I was talking about how sometimes we just have children on accident. And one of the ladies said that happened to me. This woman up at Willowbrook had two children in the same year. But they weren't twins. So she had a baby like in January or February. She said, then I went to the appointment and I just wasn't feeling very good. And she's like, yeah, you're pregnant. She's like, that's impossible. So like November, December then has the next baby. It's unbelievable. Our two girls are 21 months apart. That's about as close as you want to get. Do we have anybody that's closer? Yeah, you got a bunch of really close ones, right? How close? 14 and a half. You don't have to. You don't have to explain it, Trisha. We're not going to judge. 14 and a half months. That's pretty close. What do you guys? 17 months. 18 months. What's that? Ron, what's wrong with you, man? 13 months. See, it's just going to start happening. Chris was the youngest one. Kathy, where were you? 15 months. Crazy. We're not, my brother and sister, I think my sister and I are close to that. I think we're about 17 or 18 months. One of my uncles, my mom told me, I have an uncle who's like, I came around here for 5 years and you were pregnant the entire time. You just kept popping them out. And there's pros and cons to all of it, but it's amazing when you keep it light. But you can understand the difference it is when you come of an age where you begin to be a little bit more aware of the scenario or the circumstances of your birth. You can understand how this could really affect you. I mean, when Clark was born, it was this monumental occasion. Like, we had waited for 5 years, and it was like we held up Simba, like, we've all been waiting for this moment, and both of our parents, there were no children, grandchildren yet, and so it was this grand moment. And so just imagine the difference of that scenario and somebody who was an accident, who was an afterthought, who wasn't planned, who's maybe given up for adoption. And you can, and I know that even in a small sampling that's in this room, there's a lot of hands that would raise up in all of these circumstances. And then a lot of people just don't even know. I mean, I don't know how you broach this topic with your parents the first time. So what was going on, when you move on with it? Because the reality is, and this is kind of where we're getting to, is that we all are more significant than a man and a woman's decision to give birth to us. Like, we just realize that. Biologically, we know that that's how it happens. Like, we're not going to talk about how babies are born. Like, we understand that part of it. But all of us realize that we're more than that. Like, we're more than that. We're more than that. Because we understand that a mother who maybe has a baby too early or in a bad circumstance, that she may give that child up for adoption at the very beginning of the child's life. And again, some of you have probably been there in your families. And you realize that that can be the best decision for the child, for the parents, for the parents who then become parents. And so it's more than biology, because there's something about that life that's significant. That there's something about something inside of us that's bigger than just X's and O's and genetic compounds and all that stuff. That there's a spirit there. There's a soul there. And when I start to think about the circumstances that may surround our conception and our birth, I can see how it can be very easy for someone. And this is where I think the Bible's message resonates very well with people in this circumstance. Because if you don't have a faith component, if you don't have belief in a higher power, then imagine how easy it is to be discouraged and depressed about that. That was just an accident. I wasn't supposed to be here. And what the Bible does is it gives this different picture of life. And Jesus, in one of his most famous teachings or sayings, in Luke, I think it's in Matthew 2, Luke 12, verse 4 to 6, because with all of that in context, you know this verse before I read it, you've heard it a million times, but with all of that as our context, I think to hear this is endearing. I tell you, my friends, don't be afraid of those who kill the body and after that can do no more, but I will show you whom you should fear. Fear him who after your body has been killed has the authority to throw you in hell. Yes, I tell you to fear him. Are not five sparrows sold for 2 pennies? Yet not one of them is forgotten by God. Indeed, the very hairs of your head are numbered. Don't be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows. I always get that image as just one of the more vivid ones. The numbers of hairs on your head are numbered. Even if you were an accident. Maybe even especially if you were an accident. And maybe not even if you were an accident, but you feel like an accident. The word for this Sunday is purpose. And I think a lot of us struggle with our purpose at one time or another in our lives. And if you have this concept of lostness in the beginning, especially when you consider your upbringing, then it's maybe especially easy to just go, why am I even here? The last week we asked the question, where are you? And it has to do with presence. Today we ask the question, why are you here? Why are you here? Another little side project I did this week is I got to thinking about cities. I grew up in Defiance, which is a huge metropolitan area compared to McConnellsville or some of the places that you guys came from. But these are small towns. What was the big town? Zanesville? So that's kind of the big city. I don't know how big Zanesville is. 70,000? Is that all it is? 30,000? Man, you were in the country. Defiance got about 20,000, and it was kind of the big city for the area. But we would go like to Toledo or Fort Wayne. But we're in Columbus. Columbus is a big city. I mean, it's not a huge city, but it's a big city. Anybody know what the metro is here? Metro population? And we're a million plus in the city, and then we're almost 2 million metropolitan. I mean, it's a big city. I was surprised to see that at least in 2015, the estimates are that this metropolitan area is still larger than Nashville, which I thought was interesting. It won't be for very much longer, but it's a big city. But it's not the big, big cities. What are the big, big cities? Probably the five biggest in the United States are pretty easy to name, right? What are they? New York's number one, Chicago's three, LA's two, Houston and Dallas. Those are like the five, those are huge cities. Like cities like Columbus just are like part of Houston or part of LA. What's interesting, so let's think about this. I think a city of a million people is kind of a jump, right? When you get to a million, most people are going to say, yeah, a million people, that's pretty big. Do you have any idea how many cities and metro areas in the United States have over a million people? 8? More. About 50. Dalton, you're going to visit every one of them someday. I have confidence in you. So about 50 cities. So you got New York. The New York metro area is about 20 million. I mean, that's how big it is. And then all the way down to a million. So there's about 50 of those cities. And I don't know about you, but when you go to like an Ohio State game and there's 100,000 people around you, you just feel so small and You're like, all these people. And then you realize that the metro area has 20 of those gatherings of people. And if you've ever been in a huge mass like that, I mean, it's just huge. And you think how big the world is. And the United States has 50 cities that are that big. How many cities of over a million people do you think there are in China? Keep going, buddy. I like your aggression. Higher. Higher. You have to. 2,000. That's too many. So somewhere between. It's about 150. Like 150 cities. Now, if we sat here, I'm guessing in an hour or two, we probably could figure out all 50 of the United States cities. I mean, we know those. I can name about three in China. And to think of that, there's 150 cities that right now don't give a rip that the Cowboys are playing the Packers. They don't even know who the Cowboys and Packers are. That there's 150 cities of over a million people. New York has got over 20 million people in the metropolitan area. It's the biggest city in the United States. You know, it's only about the 20th largest metropolitan area in the world. 20! There's 20 more cities that are bigger than New York City in the world. When you put all this stuff together, and you think about the fact that Jesus says that God knows how many hairs you have on your head, it kind of blows your mind, doesn't it? There's over 7 billion people in the world. I cannot even fathom that number. I just can't. And yet Jesus says, but I know exactly how many hairs that you have on your head. And so we're caught in between these worlds of just being overwhelmed by numbers and finding our place in this world. Like, what's our place in this world? Over 7 billion people alive right now, and you're one of them. And we had a funeral on Friday for Ed Kirkpatrick's mother, and I remember just sitting thinking about it as I was thinking about all this other stuff, and you're thinking about how precious life is. Like each life is so precious. And all around the world, how many hundreds of people have died just since we've been together today? And how many babies have been born just since? I mean, it's just this revolving door. And somehow, that can be overwhelming to all of us. And we're like, what is our role or place in all of this world? And so I want to try to make the case, and a very famous theologian is going to help me this morning. I'm going to watch this 4-minute video from a very famous West Coast theologian named Reese Witherspoon. And she's going to help us, I think. She's pretty to look at, so we can watch her for 4 minutes. But at the end of her speech, she accepts an Academy Award for Best Actress in 2006. Anybody know what movie she was in 2006? It was the Johnny Cash Walk the Line, okay? So she played June Carter Cash in the movie. And she says something about her at the end of the speech that I think really preaches well to what we're talking about today. So Clark, go ahead and start rolling the film. It's a little long and I wasn't going to show it all, but I think it's good to kind of listen to what she says here. Brother Jamie Foxx will get us started here. Sorry, I ruined the drama. Reese is going to win. Now listen to what she says here in a minute. We're the only church in the entire world that watched that today. Not very many times I could be that confident, but I feel confident about that. I came across that week, and I thought, man, that's perfect. And that speaks so much to our purpose, doesn't it? Like, how many of us would say that? Like, I'm just trying to matter. I mean, that's what our purpose is. We're just trying to matter. And you can fill that meaning in however you want to. And the Cashes were Christians. And there's no doubt in my mind that that's kind of where that inspiration came from. I just want to matter. And I know that it's not always easy. And I know that it's not always clear. And as we get older, it changes perhaps a little bit. But what is it that we're here to do? How do we matter? There's a couple passages of scripture I want to close with here in a minute. First, I want to remind you about a meeting that took place in 1646. Over the course of 1646 and 1647, the Anglican Church in England was trying to better their relationship with the Church of Scotland. And so they got around a table and they were trying to come up with some doctrinal compromises, or compromises is not the word, but just kind of conciliatory language. What are some things that we can get around? And they comprised a document that, if you grew up, especially probably as a Presbyterian, you're probably familiar with it, but it's called the Westminster Shorter Catechism and the Westminster Shorter Statement of Faith. And it was this idea of, well, can we just boil things down to some things we can get together and agree upon? And the most famous statement to come out of that statement, it's a series of questions and answers. And the very first question is, what is the chief end of man? It's kind of another way of asking, what's our purpose? What's the chief end of man? And the answer for the Westminster Confession is, man's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. What a better way to summarize what we're trying to be about as Christians. To glorify God and enjoy Him forever. And you may ask, well, how do we do that? Well, isn't that the million-dollar question? And God made us different and unique, and I'm sure that there are different and unique ways to do that. I always talk about in the Garden of Eden, when God set out Adam and Eve to do their business, He gave them jobs to do before the fall ever happened. Because they had a purpose. They needed something to do. All of us need something to do. And the words of Paul kind of echo in our minds as we do that. Whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all in the name of the Lord. Whatever you do, do it in the name of the Lord. That is your purpose. He doesn't give a statement of these are all the things you have to do. He says, whatever you do, do it in the Lord's name. Mike Schreiber, when you're working on locomotives, somehow you do that in the Lord's name. And that's so different than selling cars. And I don't know how you sell cars in the Lord's name, but there's a way, and Randy's figured it out. Or IT, or sales, or whatever that you do it in the name of the Lord. That's your purpose. And one of the things that we're kind of talking about this year is our church's purpose. And the church is a way, I believe that the chief role of the church is to equip you and me to do that. We come together and we remind ourselves and remind each other, we're here to glorify God in whatever vocation we may be doing, whoever we may be interacting with every week, however we may spend our free time, however we may be a neighbor, all of those things, somehow you're glorifying God and you're doing it in an enjoying way. I wonder how many Christians would say, yeah, I'm enjoying God forever. Because a lot of Christians are angry and upset and afraid and all these other things. What I love about this confession is it reminds us that first and foremost, we're here to delight in Him. In Romans chapter 11, verse 33 to 36, Paul says, oh, the depth of the riches of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable His judgments and His paths beyond tracing out. Who has known the mind of the Lord? Or who has been His counselor? Who has ever given to God that God should repay them? For Him and through Him and for Him, all things are made. To Him be glory forever and ever. Amen. It goes back to what we talked about last week, to presence. Our presence and our purpose are connected. Wherever we are present. Last week we talked about being where we were. It's so easy to get distracted and be other places. Wherever we are, our presence is also connected to our purpose, that you're here in this place to glorify God. Now, in the walls of the church building, when Brian's leading worship and we're studying the Word, it's easier to do. But maybe when you're driving car or you're in the shower or you're at work or whatever, it may not be as clear. But somehow, allow all that side things to kind of move to the side, the peripheral things that try to distract us, and be reminded that in this moment, I'm glorifying God. Somehow, some way. The purpose of us as individuals is directly connected to the purpose of the church, and that's one of the things that we're really kind of wrestling with over the course of the year. And we have the graphics, hopefully the posters will be up next week to remind us of all these things that we're pursuing as the Alum Creek Church. And one of the reasons I kind of emphasize four different things is because I think there are four chief things that really kind of arise to the surface is our purpose as a church. And this morning we've tried to remind ourselves of some of the ways that we connect work with glory. We're a family. One of the things we talked about is being a family. Your purpose as part of this church is to help us be family. And so what do families look like? There are some people in this room where this church is their primary family. You can ask yourself, but what would I be without this church family? And so we're all accountable to one another. And so when Aubrey and Cameron have a fourth child, Bly says, hey, you know what? Part of the way to be a family is let's bring them food. Well, let's do that. Almost every Wednesday, we get together in different parts of town, and we say, hey, I know one way we can be a family. Let's eat together. Let's just eat together and hang out and get to know each other better. That's how we be family. It's one of the reasons we want to encourage folks to go over and see Chuck and Margaret, because right now they're not able to be here with us. And so, hey, I know what a family does. Let's go be with them. Let's go be with them. I know when my kids have birthdays, and when any of us have birthdays, I get cards in the mail from folks at this church because they're part of my family. I get as many cards here as I get from my real family because this is just as important. And so as we live our lives and wrestle with our purpose, well, what's one of the purposes that you can clarify? Well, how are you helping the family? What's your role within this family? And then we further kind of delineate it with the idea of being real, because families are real together. And so we try to be real with one another. We don't do it perfectly, and it's easy to put a face on, and there's always going to be stuff that comes along and surprises you and go, man, I thought we knew him. I thought we knew her. I thought we knew what was going on. But one of the things is a purpose of our church, purpose as individuals, we come and be authentic with one another. Let's share our burdens. The Bible over and over again talks about the importance of confession, about being real with each other. How are you helping do that? How are you helping present and model authenticity to this body? We're also a church that desires in our purpose to be deep. We don't settle for easy answers. One of the reasons that I talked to Kurt about leading this discussion of the shack is because I know that that will lead to deep discussions. Not superficial stuff, not shallow stuff. That book deals with some deep stuff. Well, how does God relate to us? Well, what is God like? What is the Holy Spirit like? The Father, the Son, the Spirit, how do they interact with each other? How is God with us in tragedy? How is God with us in loss? These are deep things. And if we're just kind of left on our own to try to figure those things out, no, one of our purposes is to dig deep. And so we need to study the Word on our own. We need to be in prayer and reflection and meditation, working this out on our own. And then another purpose of ours is to realize that we are part of something bigger. We are part of the Lord's church. And the Lord's church is touching every country around the world. It's doing wonderful and amazing things all around us. How are we realizing that? Our work camp has kind of reminded us of that. We've been able to partner with another congregation. There are people that are around you each and every day who are part of the kingdom. And instead of putting up walls and barriers, instead it might be an opportunity to say, how can we do this together? It's one of the things I love about Hutch. Every time he's talking about his job, he's like, man, I met a Christian at my job. And I know immediately, he's like, how can we work together as brothers and sisters or whatever? And fulfill the Westminster Confession. How do we work together and glorify God and enjoy Him forever? The thing is, when it comes to our purpose, it's not on us. It's not like God is waiting for us to do things. God is at work, and the question is whether we're going to work alongside Him and take part in this amazing journey of life and faith. We're going to talk a lot about a lot of heady and challenging and deep things over the coming weeks. And they all are kind of aimed at helping us learn our purpose. Help us do something that matters. I don't know about you, but I just want to matter too. I don't necessarily want to be on TV, and I don't want my name on, but I just want to matter. And my guess is all of you just want to matter. So as you go into this new week, start asking yourselves the question, how do I matter? How do I do things that matter? Because I know we do a lot of stuff that doesn't matter. Let's find the stuff that does matter and begin to fulfill our calling to whatever we do in word or deed. Do it all in the name of the Lord, because God has numbered our hairs. He knows each of us, and He knows what we're doing. This morning, I would invite you to sing this song with us as we close out, and then Ruth will close us in prayer, echoing our call of salvation and purpose that we find there. You'll stand with us.